teams covered, no talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Let's give away some putt-putt. You want to do that? Let's give away some miniature golf. I went over to the Pixar putt over at Discovery Green. It is awesome. It is great. It's the ultimate pop-up open-air mini golf experience made up of 18 fun and interactive holes inspired by the stories, characters, and icons from some of Pixar's most beloved films, including Toy Story, The Incredibles, Monsters, Inc., Finding Nemo, Coco, a favorite of mine, A Bug's Life, WALL-E, and Inside Out. Pixar putt is to take guests to infinity and beyond. I got beat by my wife whenever we went the other day. I don't like to admit that.
Golf?
But we're training. Miniature golf.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but Pixar, sure. At Pixar putt-putt.
That was
putt-putt.
In the kitchen or at Discovery Green?
We're going to give away. Well, I mean, yeah, she cooks way better than I do as well. I detect no lies. All right, let's give away two tickets to Pixar putt. Caller number 9. Caller number 9 to 713-780-3776 wins a two-pack. To go play the Pixar putt-putt at Discovery Green. Great time to be had. Caller number 9, 713-780-3776. So, did you notice that Nick Caserio had the second best draft in the 2021 NFL draft? Pro Football Focus, who now is a contributor for ESPN Plus, by the way, they were able to, they used their WAR metric, which is their wins above replacement. We know it well from baseball. That term WAR is usually more of a baseball term, but now Pro Football Focus uses it in some of their football metrics as well. So they looked at every rookie that every team drafted in the NFL. They added up all of their WAR production from those rookies, and then they ranked accordingly the teams 1 through 32 in the NFL. Despite not having a first-round pick, despite not having a second-round pick, the greatness that is Nick Caserio with Davis Mills, Nico Collins, Brevin Jordan, Garrett Wallow, and the legendary Roy Lopez.
You love Roy.
According to WAR, they had the second-best draft in the NFL behind only Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots.
It's got to be an incomplete because it's not a full draft. When you don't have a first or a second.
That's bonus points. The fact that they were able to accumulate all this WAR without a first and a second.
Because we know that the top of the draft are the biggest difference makers now in the NFL, the way the draft goes. And also the biggest chance for you to swing and miss and set your franchise back. So he did very well. But I think that until you have a full complement, that's why I keep saying how important this year's draft is going to be. With all of his picks, with all of the opportunities to really show what he can do and get them right, he could speed up this rebuild by hitting on most all of them, because no one hits on all of them. But I think that the fact that they're elevating him, it's like saying everybody that's saying that Davis Mills next to Mac Jones is the second best quarterback coming out of this draft, and then they want to redo the draft, and who's going to take a different quarterback, and how high would Davis Mills go? Stop kidding yourself. He still would have gone in the third round because he was completely unknown. I don't think that he would have surpassed anybody that was taken ahead of him, and I don't think that, like I said, from a Caserio perspective, I give him his props. He did better than expected, better than maybe we thought he did at the time. But because he didn't have a full complement of draft picks and no first or second, I'm not going to get him. I'm not going to anoint him one of the top two drafts last year.
I think there's a couple of things to ask whenever you talk about this. And to your point, it's a fair one. Like, you didn't have a first and second. They were able to hit on players like Davis Mills, who got to play quite a bit as a rookie third rounder. Nico Collins played quite a bit because the roster was so bad. So same thing for Brevin Jordan, Garrett Wallow, and Roy Lopez. But whenever we look at the pros and cons of Nick Caserio, and there's a long list of cons, one of the things, and maybe it is the top of the pro list, is the fact that he did have a good draft, even though he didn't have his first or second. And it's tough to evaluate a full draft class whenever you don't have a first or second round pick. He still had a productive draft in year one as the Texans GM without a first or second rounder. Do we undervalue that whenever we're trying to assess the Houston Texans GM after 1 year on the job?
I think some can, but I think that you bring up a very, very valid point that I neglected to bring up, which is the other thing of a lot of times you might have a good draft if it's evaluated 4 or 5 years down the road when these guys finally hit the field. But because the Texans had so many holes to fill and nothing to lose, they just threw out everybody immediately and said, hey, show us what you can do and get better week to week. It doesn't matter if you make mistakes. And so therefore, as those picks started to show some signs of progress, they got the gold star instead of the incomplete because the players weren't playing because they were playing behind better players on a given roster. I think that's absolutely spot on, and I think that's something that has to be take into account here? Because I go back to this, and I think it's ludicrous that anybody would even throw this out there. And I saw Brendan making faces at me, but I completely believe the fact that Davis Mills, to say that he was a success story for the Texans is one thing. Davis Mills to say, would you take him over any of the quarterbacks taken in the first round last year, is a complete and utter misstep by anybody that believes that.
Joel, I don't believe that. Where I was making faces was the take specifically that he would still be a third-round pick. I don't agree with that. I think if you knew what Davis Mills was giving you in year one, he probably isn't a first. But I do think someone goes in the second and says, look, this guy looks like he has a shot to be a starting quarterback in the NFL. I don't think guys make it past the second round if they look like potential starting NFL quarterbacks.
Here's where I'd push back. Most of the teams that were thinking that way that would be in the market for a quarterback as a starter or a future starter would have already done what they needed to do and tried to get one of those first five guys.
Maybe only because last year's first round was so deep. But I think after what Davis Mills in a regular year, after what he's done, he would look like a second-round pick.
So you don't think he'd be a first-rounder, though?
No, and I'm definitely not taking him over any of those other guys. Those guys all have way higher ceilings. But, like, I guess Jalen Hurts was a third, too.
Here's the case study. Here's the case study to your question, and it might be, like, the determining factor on which way you're going to go. Because you're not picking him over Lawrence. You're not picking him over Willison. You're not picking him over Trey Lance, Justin Fields, Mac Jones. Those were all the rookie first-rounders.
Yeah, Hurts was 2 years ago, so it's different draft.
There was one quarterback selected in the second round of the 2021 NFL draft, and he was from just up the road in Manville. Kyle Trask was taken with the last pick of the second round by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Do you think if Tampa Bay is reliving pick number 64, they select Davis Mills over Kyle Trask?
I don't. I don't at all. And you know why? Unless they're basing it on being able to see Davis Mills in a Texans uniform for a full season, they're basing on their college careers, and they're basing on what they saw and the offense that they ran and the ability to do the things that they did. Trask had a better college career. Trask is a guy that they're – and it's down in their neck of the woods. If he does turn out to be something and he played at Florida, it means something too. I just don't think they're changing their mind.
I just think – I think I value what he did more this year than you guys do. I think
Davis Jeremy
Mills –
for sure.
I just thought Davis Mills looked like I think his ceiling is probably quarterback 20. But what I saw was that he wasn't all that far from being that guy.
See, I think higher of him, and I've told you guys this, the higher end ceiling is he ends up being a Kirk Cousins type player, which would be what, top 15?
Maybe 15, but in that range.
But because at the start of this process, when he and I had some passionate debates going on, and there was a lot of people in Jeremy's camp that thought this guy, at best, is a backup. But, you know, maybe he doesn't even belong on a roster in a year or two. So you don't know until you know, and you throw him out there and you see what you got. It also turns out to be where we don't know what you have in Trey Lance. But I definitely think, like you said, the upside is so high because of his legs alone and the things that he brings to the table that you can't turn your back and say, well, I would give up a ton of assets in a trade if I'm the Niners for Davis Mills, who played right down the road, as opposed to a guy that has a tremendously high ceiling in Trey Lance.
To me, you look at a quarterback position. We talked earlier about how you almost have to have a Pat Mahomes. You almost have to have a Josh Allen, a Joe Burrow, a Justin Herbert, an Aaron Rodgers, a Tom Brady. I look at Davis Mills, and while I'm higher on him now than I was like week 8 of the NFL season, I still look at his upside as a top 15, top 20 quarterback in the NFL. I just don't view his upside as a franchise quarterback. I don't think he's ever going to be able to like put his team on his back and carry you deep into the postseason. I look at Davis Mills in that mold. Like if I was trying to decide that with Trey Lance, like Trey Lance to me still has the potential to be very good. We don't know. Like it's the unknown, right? It's like the devil you know versus the devil you don't. We know what Davis Mills in my mind, like what his upside is going to be. We still don't know that from a Trey Lance, especially after like the Pat Mahomes model as well. Also, whenever you circle back to how we started this conversation, and 713-780-ESPN if you want to join in on it, 713-780-3776, as far as it like the resume and like this is an example of Nick Caserio being able to draft well, I do think it's a promising sign in that point of view that Nick Caserio, at least from year one, drafted well with what was an incomplete draft class. I'll also say this, though. To me, you shouldn't be looking at grading draft classes after one season. Yes, you can absolutely start to get a little bit of a hint. You can start to see what the upside is going to be. You can start to get excited about certain rookies. But when the NFL has 4 years attached to a rookie that you select, and in the case of a first-rounder, the fifth-year team option that you have, you should be looking at draft classes in four-year windows. Like, how we're going to view the Nick Caserio first draft class in 2021 is a conversation that should be had in 2025.
Let's be honest. Isn't the whole reason that we're having this conversation right now and considering the Texans, at least considering them in the top couple draft classes, is because of one player, and it's a quarterback. It's Davis Mills and what he was able to do in a short period of time, but it's the whole class too, and that's what takes that to another level. You have to give them 4 or 5 years, because look, I can go right down the list position by position and tell you guys that had good first years and then completely crapped the bed. RG3 and Vince Young at the quarterback position. You know, you take running backs a dime a dozen. Some of them had great rookie years and then just fell off the table. A guy like Trent Richardson, who everybody thought coming out of Alabama was the guy, and he looked like he had signs his rookie year, and then completely just went into a different stratosphere of hell in terms of what he could bring to the table. He went directly south. So you can go over and over position by position and go, we think we got it right after a year, but you don't truly know until you see several years put together in a row of guys making progress.
How about if you're grading Pat Mahomes after 1 year? Started one game in week 17 when the Chiefs had home field advantage locked up. How are you looking at Pat Mahomes after one season, after his rookie year? You're probably like, well, we don't really know. We don't know what we have.
Well,
and then all of a sudden he's the best quarterback in the
NFL.
As
highly regarded as he came out because of the injury and everything else, and limited opportunities, when he did, he didn't do much or even – try to do much, that the grades were real low. After this last season, he showed enough progress that the grades started to turn a little bit. But in order to make an exact determination, you need a year or two more to see what you truly have in him, too. You can go position group. I look at the Packers, who 1 year passed on some great players and took Tony Mandrich as an offensive lineman. And Tony Mandrich was on the cover of Sports Illustrated. Tony Mandrich was the absolute can't-miss offensive lineman. You know what he missed?
Oh, wrong guy.
A chance to absolutely play more than 1 or 2 years in the NFL. And steroids were the only reason that he was taken as highly as he was. So you can swing and miss a lot easier over time than the fact that you're trying to evaluate after just one season.
Yeah, I was thinking about the quarterback, the Marijanovich.
Don Mikowski or Todd Marinovich.
Todd Marinovich to Marijanovich. What a story there. That was great.
Who was the guy we had here? Brian, the linebacker from USC.
I don't remember.
One of the better linebackers in Texans history.
You're talking about Cushing?
Cushing.
That was PDs.
But I'm just saying, from the way they were brought up, both guys' dads had them eating engineered foods every single meal. The stories were Cushing, just like Marinovich, never were allowed to have fast food after a game when everybody went to the drive-in or went to get burgers and fries, that they would go into their little coolers and bring out their shakes and all their proteins. And Marinovich went off the deep end. His dad did everything to get him to USC, to get him to be a first-round pick. And the minute that he was like, what the hell am I doing? He got tatted all over his body, became a skateboard pro and a rock singer, and went, this football stuff is for the birds, I'm out.
713-780-ESPN if you want to get into the discussion. 713-780-3776. We'll get your thoughts when we return. Also, we'll go around the league. And we talked earlier about Jimmy Garoppolo. What is the future of Jimmy G? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Texter saying you think 3% is a good percentage of black coaches in a league that is over 70% black. Talking to me, something that I said about Bienemy. No, I don't. I think it's a terrible ratio. I think it's an NFL league-wide problem. It's difficult whenever you're looking to try to hire the best man for the job and you compare like a David Culley getting the job over Eric Bienemy. I understand it. I respect the opinion. I think it's a terrible percentage, and it's something that needs to change. The NFL has tried to do it. It is where it is right now. They think that I'm also under the pixie dust of Jack Easterby and Nick Caserio. That might be true.
That could be Eric the dog walker.
It could be true. Brandon T. saying, I think Davis Mills is too smart and driven to get worse. I agree with that thought. I just don't see much where Davis Mills is going to get better. Like right now, if you're a ranking starting quarterbacks in the NFL, 1 through 32, where's Davis Mills? 25-ish? Somewhere between 20 and 25? Like, he might crack the teens. I just don't see Davis Mills getting much better. I feel like he is kind of who he is, and that the promise and the potential of Davis Mills really isn't that high.
Yeah, I mean, look, and I was the one that first threw it out to you that if you waited a year, a lot of people said that he would be a first-round pick.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, that's just innuendo. You don't know, right? And it's something you were never going to know because we don't know how good Stanford would have been with the talent pool that they had around him. And you got to have a line to protect you. You got to have – just like he did with the Texans, right? So he got thrown to the Wolves, and whether he was evaluated for another year at Stanford, he was evaluated in the NFL – the fact of the matter is, it was inconclusive coming in because you didn't know. We've seen too many guys with the skill set to play that then get given the opportunity to have the franchise on your shoulders and don't know what to do with it or can't handle it once they get it there. And the Texans have been through how many quarterbacks, including Brock Osweiler and the small sample size and the big contract and how disastrous that was, to know that firsthand. You have to have even the best evaluators, Lance and otherwise, and all these people that do it for a living, they're going to swing and miss just as well as they're going to get it right. And the only way you truly know is to put them in those situations. I think it's a luxury for the Texans to be able to say, hey, because that year was, I don't want to say a throwaway, but it was a complete winning doesn't matter rebuild situation. They had the luxury of putting guys in real NFL games all season long with the sole reason of evaluating them as being NFL players.
Here's a fascinating question. Do you think Davis Mills will win a playoff game as a Houston Texan?
No.
Brendan?
I don't.
Man, I'm more open to it. I don't think they're going to stick with him, so no.
Yeah, I'm going no on that either because I don't think they're going to stick with him. They're going to look at Mahomes. They're going to look at Josh Allen. They're going to look at Joe Burrow. They're going to look at Justin Herbert and be like, well, Davis Mills is not in that conversation.
But I think they can win a playoff game with him. I think he is a good enough quarterback to win, or will be a good enough quarterback to win a playoff game with.
Is he T.J. Yates? Is he better than T.J. Yates
yes,
ever
I think
was?
He's better than T.J.
Because if he is, then he has the ability to possibly do that.
Oh, that T.J. Yates team was like really good, though.
But
really
I get
good around
it, but
him.
You know what? You don't know what, that's what I'm saying. The reason why I said no so quickly was by the time they sniff the playoffs the next time, he's not going to be around, whether it's by their choice or his choice. Depending on how the situation plays out,
he's got 3 years left on his contract. So now you're talking about it's a loaded question. I'll be honest. Like now you're looking at, do they keep him for 3 years as the starter? Maybe even probably, but do you extend him beyond that? Do they feel like they need an upgrade at the position whenever they get playoff quality as a roster? And I believe that he won't. I'd be willing to take that bet that he will never win a playoff game as a Houston Texan. To Brendan's points, can he? Yeah, he can if they build a tremendous roster around
him.
Well,
but again, we're saying he can after one season. We don't know.
And that's probably a good thing, considering whenever he was drafted, the city hated the pick because they thought Nick Caserio was reaching after the Deshaun Watson news, and now you're actually bringing up the question to me is a positive in the career trajectory of a Davis Mills.
Yeah, but the other thing that I brought up, though, is how many guys after 1 year that was decent to better than average to actually really good in the NFL as a quarterback and fell off after that and showed you that it was just a flash in the pan as opposed to the start of a skyrocketing NFL career where you were going to be in the league a long time and be very good. It happens both ways. So therefore, the other thing we don't know is we're making all these speculations and these educated guesses on a situation where we don't know what he's going to be like in year two.
No.
He could go one of two ways, and it's basically a crapshoot which way he goes.
It's maybe kind of a perfect segue into the Jimmy Garoppolo conversation too, because Davis Mills, rookie third rounder, no one expected him to play right away. He did have to start a substantial amount of games, whereas Jimmy Garoppolo got to learn from Tom Brady, the greatest quarterback resume that there has been. He was a late second round draft pick, and now, like, you look at San Francisco and they're winning playoff games. It's fair to say that they're winning these playoff games in spite of him, right? Like, it's kind of the Davis Mills. Like, can he win a playoff game? Yes, Jimmy Garoppolo can win a playoff game when you surround him with the talent and the running game that San Francisco has. But is he the reason that San Francisco's doing it?
No.
Probably not. And it's an interesting conversation, too, about, like, the future of Jimmy Garoppolo. He's got his team right here to the NFC Championship game. If he wins this game, he's a Super Bowl-level quarterback. Yeah, you got Trey Lance right on his heels.
Wait,
what is the future of Jimmy Garoppolo?
He's already
in the NFL?
A Super Bowl quarterback because he's been there and done it before. He took the Niners to the Super Bowl and should have won it if he actually made the right pass on a deep ball that would have won him a ring.
I forgot about that. I'll be honest with you.
So, I mean, Emmanuel Sanders, wide the hell open with a chance to put the game away, and Jimmy overthrew him. So the thing is, when you look at it, he's already a Super Bowl caliber quarterback. You also have to evaluate it and say, how much does it matter to Jimmy? He's a $100 million man. And I hate to say this because as fans and as people doing what we do, you look at it and say, everybody's dream is to play professional sports and be able to live out their dreams. Some guys, not so much. And I've given examples, and the one that I always go back to is Kelvin Cato. I cannot tell you how many times Kelvin Cato told me, you know what, Joel? I don't really like basketball. But you know what? It's the only job I knew of that I was going to be a millionaire and I was going to make me and my family set financially for life. And that's why I play. Because we were going to Phoenix with a chance in the final game of the regular season to either get in the playoffs or go home. And we were stoked, all of us, the traveling team, broadcasters, PR, everybody. This is so awesome. And I'm like, Kel, you're fired up, right? We were walking to the plane. He goes, nah, not really. And I just stopped. I was like, what? And he's like, we win, we lose. Paycheck's the same. I'm good. I'm like, oh, my God. And I sat there on the plane the entire flight trying to, like, just analyze that going, there are people. Because I kept saying to, like, my other broadcasters, like, give me his athleticism and his size with the heart and the desire that I have. And let me take a crack at it. Because that's almost a travesty to me that he had everything at the in the palm of his hand and he didn't care.
There's probably more people that work in sports with, like, the side jobs in sports, like broadcasters, whether it's, like, athletic trainers, that have more of a love for sport than the actual athletes.
And so that's what I ask about Jimmy G. You know what? You went through the Patriot system. You've been to a Super Bowl. You're a $100-plus million in the bank guy. You know what? Everybody thinks that you can have a career doing everything that you want to do because you're a good-looking quarterback dude. Do you really want to do this, and does it really matter to you that much? Because if it does, you should realize it's not the worst thing in the world if you go elsewhere. It's not the worst thing in the world to be a Kirk Cousins or maybe a little less. He's probably in that same window as from Kirk Cousins to what we think Davis Mills could possibly be, but he can still keep collecting checks. He might not be on as good of a team, but if he wants to, he can keep playing, and this can help him. But it's not necessarily going to help him with the Niners because the Niners have committed to another kid. And whether it's right or wrong and he's good or bad, he's going to play.
None of us think that Jimmy Garoppolo will be a San Francisco 49er next year, right? We're all on the same page there. To me, he's...
You know what? If they win it all, and we find out that what we've heard is true, that they just don't think Lance is ready yet, I could see him on a short-term deal running it back.
Well, he's under contract next season. He doesn't enter free agency until after next year.
Okay.
So the contract actually suits up for one more last ride with Jimmy Garoppolo as the starting quarterback.
That.
I don't believe that's going to happen. Like, they invested so much to move up to trade for the number three pick of the draft and use that for Trey Lance. They're going to move on from Jimmy Garoppolo. Jimmy Garoppolo is still going to be a starting quarterback somewhere.
I agree.
I believe Jimmy Garoppolo is going to be a starting quarterback for a pretty decent team. There's going to be a lot of teams that have playoff quality rosters that just don't have the quarterback that would be in the market for a Jimmy Garoppolo. Denver, if they don't give Aaron Rodgers.
Pittsburgh
has a playoff roster where they would love to have a Jimmy Garoppolo over a Mason Rudolph. So Jimmy G is going to be a starter in the NFL. It's not going to be with San Francisco. And he could find himself back into the playoffs again next year. It's just that potential, that ceiling is a little lower when you have Jimmy G as your
quarterback. And no one needs to feel sorry for a guy that, like I said, has a model-type appearance, has $100 million plus in the bank, has a Super Bowl appearance, and still has his wits about him and has enough of his career left that he can do whatever he wants to do with the rest of his life. I don't feel sorry for him. It's just that, you know, it's a weird situation because of what the Niners went out and committed to for the future.
713-780-ESPN. Ocho says Panthers. That's another good one. Another team that needs a quarterback. And Matt Rhule is going to be so desperate that he's going to be trying to upgrade that position anyway, anyhow. 713-780-ESPN. 713-780-3776. When we return, the mirror images between the Texans and the Rockets. Joel explains next. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Before we go to break, I'll tell you about Apollo Men's Health again, because on a daily basis, Dr. O and his staff are helping people in the Houston area and changing their lives. He can do the same thing for you, too. You don't have the energy you once had when you were really feeling your best in your life. You thought those days were gone. There's no way to get them back. You're wrong. He can get them back for you. He can get you feeling like brand new and in so many ways, from the boardroom to the weight room to the bedroom. He's got answers and solutions if you just take the time to tell him about your problems. Your health is your wealth. You got to invest in yourself just like you do in the stock market and with a new year and resolutions and all these things. Sometimes you need a little outside guidance, and that's where Apollo Men's Health can help. Go to ApolloMH.com right now and sign up for your first appointment. You're going to find out most major insurance is accepted, discounts for military personnel and first responders. Mention my name, Joel Blank. Get a free B12 shot on your first visit. And then go in with an open mind and honest answers and tell them what you're trying to accomplish. They're going to set you up with a program that works, and they're going to be with you every every step of the way. And it's across the board from workouts. And you want to recover quicker, HGH peptide therapy. You want to make sure that you are losing weight, gaining muscle mass, losing body fat. All you got to do is do a full body composition analysis, and then every couple of weeks, do another one. And it'll chart your results, tell you how you're progressing and what you need to work on. They are fantastic people getting results on a daily basis. Check them out and tell them I sent you by. It's the good people at Apollo Men's Health.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. All teams covered. No talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
713-780-ESPN. Eric the Dog Walker saying Davis Mills can be Jimmy G. I think it's pretty fair. I think it's I don't know if it's like a great comp from like arm strength, things like that. But in terms of like ranking quarterbacks 1 through 32, I think Jimmy G's probably the ceiling for Davis Mills and can certainly be in that caliber of quarterback.
To make my point, though, about you need more than 1 year, Kirk Cousins was the second quarterback taken by Washington the year they took RG3 and ended up with a better career. So when you look at it, that's why it makes our point even stronger. You can't evaluate after just one season, and you can't possibly nail the ceiling or the floor because you just don't know from year to year. You got to put a couple years together to say, okay, there's progress. Every year he's getting better. Every year he's fixing things he did wrong the year before. Or is he digressing, and is he failing where he was one time succeeding when defenses didn't have tape on him?
Yeah, of course, the ceiling is the roof. 713-780-ESPN. All right, tell me the mirror images between the Texans and the Rockets.
I don't know how much time you got because I started this a long time ago. Start looking at this more and more, people, for something that I said months and months ago, and it's something to be very, very concerned about. Questions about ownership on both sides. In one situation, you have complete questions about – you're going to say that because you're a Coug.
I love Tillman.
That's great. You can love him as a person and what he's done for the Cougars. What he's done for the Rockets is not anywhere
he's building the same way. Uncle Tillman's building it the right way.
Okay, and you've got tongue-in-cheek, and you can keep doing that.
It's not tongue-in-cheek.
But here's the thing. When you look at the – it's also the father-son combination where Robert dies, Cal takes over, questions abound. Does he really know what he's doing? Tillman takes over, questions abound. What is he doing? What coach is he keeping? Why isn't he committing? The issues with Daryl Morey, the fact that he said he wanted to be a winner and compete with the Warriors and then just fell off, tried to convince you that he was still a championship or a playoff caliber team, wasn't. Now they're trying to pick up the pieces, try to tell you that what they traded for was good. But there's the father-son combo. Now you look at first-time general managers. Rafael Stone, a guy that doesn't even have basketball operations in his background, let alone the only thing he did was shadow Daryl Morey. But yet he gets the gig, and he's expected to do miracles. Just like Nick Caserio is known for shadowing Bill Belichick, and now he's expected to do miracles in his first time as a general manager. Steven Silas, David Culley, first-time head coaches, had never been coaches before. Given the opportunity, both seem like great guys. Both seem like the guys you want to cheer for. But at the end of the day, are they really successful coaches? And will Silas ever turn out to be one? Culley, we already know the answer to. And from a Silas perspective, as much as we continue to hang our hat on, hey, he's a really good dude. But at the end of the day, when you look at it, does he have control of his own locker room? We had the Wood situation. We had the KPJ. We see that in terms of getting players to buy in, to play the play, to run the system, to defend the guys and rotate and switch and do the things that good teams do. It's constantly lacking. When they win games, it's because they're running up and down the floor, they're attacking the basket, and it's not any set structure. So you make the comparisons there. Both teams had a heyday of success selling out games and being the end-all, be-all in terms of this town. Both teams are struggling to get anybody to go to their games now, and from a marketing perspective, the same. So when you look at it, the parallels that I mentioned that everybody crapped on me for saying that I'm just an axe to grind with the Rockets guy, and I'm not looking at it the way I should be looking at it optimistically, now, you know, more than a year in on both sides from when I first started saying it, and when Stone first took the job and the Texans were starting to turn the page, you look at it and go, they're not any better, and there's a ton of similarities between the two teams.
If you look at the product, I mean, they're pretty much, I mean, they are mirror images, right? The Rockets had one of the worst regular seasons last year. It's why they ended up getting Jalen Green. Houston Texans are picking number 3 in the NFL draft because they had a terrible record in the regular season. Where they were a year ago, especially the Rockets, they had probably the worst roster in the NBA. Rockets are towards the bottom. I wouldn't say they're the absolute worst, whereas the Houston Texans, I would say they were the absolute worst roster. To me, they're the same, except that the Rockets are like fast-forwarded by about 6 months because they have the young piece and Jalen Green.
They had a full draft.
They already have the number two pick. The Texans are waiting for the number three pick. They had the full draft. That's the better way to put it. So I feel like the Rockets and the Texans are pretty much the same when it comes to the productivity that they're producing on the court or on the field. It's just that the Texans are 6 months behind because they don't have that draft pick quite yet.
But even when we had the conversation, Jeremy, that's the other thing that makes it so ironic but so accurate in terms of the comparisons, because when we start talking, things pop into our heads. And I go, while you're talking just now, I go, and both general managers are either incompletes on most of the trades they've made, or you know what, we're going to basically say that they're just throwing picks away.
Jalen Green's an incomplete to being the right pick at number two.
That is one. The other is the Harden trade and Stone himself telling you, give me till 2030 before you evaluate it, which is unheard of. It won't happen. and the centerpiece of that trade, which started out being guys like Jaylen Brown or big time players as part of a return for you, ended up being Kelly Olynyk. It went from Olynyk, Oladipo. And as you continued to digress and went backwards on who the guys could have been or were, you should have taken the deal just with Brooklyn that would have netted you Dinwiddie, LeVert, Allen, and the same picks that we're talking about that people are hoping Brooklyn sucks for, that would have made a better deal for you. From the Casario perspective, whether they're sixth round, seventh round, or otherwise, the trades he made were for guys that either never sniffed the roster, had a short week or two stint on the roster, and got let go, or never panned out.
So it's even further more to the Rockets are 6 months ahead of the Texans because like the top pick, Jalen Green versus the number three pick, James Harden's the Deshaun Watson.
Yep.
Like,
That's right.
The Texans just haven't traded to the Deshaun Watson yet, but you have your disgruntled star who's going to net you the biggest package you're going to get in return.
With long-term money and long-term contract in pocket, but is able to finagle his way out or is going to with Watson the outside off the field stuff factoring in. But you're right, mirror images with Watson and Harden too.
Here's a question for you. Who makes the playoffs first, the Houston Texans or the Houston Rockets?
In my opinion,
713-780-3776. Rockets or Texans, who makes the playoffs
in
first?
In my opinion, it would be the Rockets because, like you said, they're further along. And with the play-in tournament, there's more chances for them to get in. More than half the conference has a fighting chance.
Now, does that count as a playoff appearance?
If they win the play-in tournament and they get in as the eighth seed, it has to count.
So you're looking at 10 teams in the conference that make the playoffs as opposed to the 7 that make the playoffs in the NFL. I believe the Rockets will get there quicker as well. If I had to put my money on who gets to the playoffs faster, and we're including the play-in, the little four-team tournament, the 7 versus 10, 8 versus 9.
That's not in the playoffs, by the way. You have to win it to get to the 8 seed.
Okay, well then that changes the conversation then. Because now they have to win that to get into the playoffs. Like that changes the question.
Well, you're not a playoff team until you win the play-in tournament.
Okay, well that changes the question. Like if getting the 9 seed or the 10 seed and being in the play-in tournament isn't, we're not qualifying that as postseason, which technically the NBA doesn't.
That's why I'm going with that. You have to be a pure playoff team.
That's fine. Man, that's tough. I think I still lean Rockets. And maybe it's because Jalen Green, I still have hope for him. I still like Kevin Porter Jr. as a role player.
You have young pieces that
Christian Wood's going to get you something. Gordon's going to get you something. And you can also – you have a lot of draft capital in the future that you could package for a really good player if you go that route.
The easiest way to deductively reason all of this and say Rockets is you have players that either could, would, or should amount to something or something major as opposed to looking at the Texans going – you're holding your hopes on a third-round quarterback, and who else?
And here's another thing of why I believe the Rockets will get into the playoffs before the Texans. You're a star away from getting into the postseason in basketball, where that's not the case in the NFL, unless it's a quarterback. Like, if you draft Micah Parsons next year for the Houston Texans, you're not automatically a playoff team. But if you draft, like, the next all-star, you're probably going to be a playoff team in a year or two.
It's an incredibly tough question, especially because more teams get in the NBA. But you can fluke your way into the NFL playoffs so much easier than people give it credit. There are teams every single year that clearly don't belong there. And if you don't get that star in the NBA, you're not getting there.
But to Jeremy's point, if you get just one,
right?
Unlike having the best young quarterback in the league in Justin Herbert, but without a team around you and the right breaks falling away, you're not going to get in and do anything. In the NBA, one guy can at least catapult you to the A seed.
And the Rockets may have that guy. He's just not there yet. would Jalen Green? 713-780-ESPN.
I just, with very little confidence, I pick the Texans. But okay. I think it's basically a coin flip.
Yeah, it's a good conversation. And to argue your side of it as well, the NFL is set up for the teams that are in the bottom of the league to rise quicker than the way the NBA is because they stagger the schedule. You have 17 games.
Plus, there's no lottery. If you're a bad team, you're getting a top pick. You're not rolling the dice and losing out on a franchise-type player.
Man, it is a tough decision. I'm leaning Rockets in the playoffs before the Houston Texans. I'm curious what you think, Houston.
Write it down, Rockets fans. I said Rockets.
You did say Rockets. 713-780-3776. We'll get your responses. Also, when we come back, your girl Adele has been in the news for not so great things.
I saw that.
It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, again, Doc Linville is the man. If you want a plan for how you get your hairline back or that baboon's rear end that you got going in the back of your head that you're embarrassed about and you wear hats all the time for, you don't have to anymore. Doc made a believer out of me, John Granato, Fred Fowler, and so many more. And listeners are signing up and getting their free consultation with Doc Linville and trying to see if they could be the next in line to get the Neograft procedure, which has a 95% success rate and can get your own hair repurposed in other areas where you need it and make you look unbelievably better and your appearance gives you self-confidence. It's fantastic. Go to 975hair.com, get all the information, and sign up for that free consultation. Doc's already guaranteed for me, for ESPN listeners, no price increases or any changes all the way through the month of January because he wants to take care of the listeners, and that includes that free consultation, which normally costs $150. Go in with an open mind, but with tough questions. Ask everything like I did, and you'll find out if it's right for you. I found out immediately it was right for me. I didn't even have the idea to go there until he contacted me. Once we sat down and I realized it wasn't foams and creams and meds and all those different things that I don't believe in, it was literally my own hair repurposed from the sides and the back top where I had a ton of it and putting it where my old hairline was where I didn't have it anymore. You can see the follicles every day. They're getting thicker and stronger, and I'm looking better every single day, and I couldn't be happier. See if it's the right thing for you to do as well. 975hair.com. Go see my friend Doc Linville.
ESPN 97.5.
Have you seen the...
So you go Celine?
Have you seen the... This, it's topical. Have you seen the new Celine Dion challenge that's going around?
No.
Social media? Yeah, everybody's like lip-singing the Celine Dion song, and they do it like in their most dramatic way as they sing the song.
Is that dramatic?
It looked pretty dramatic to me. Did you not think
it
was dramatic?
You were doing a very poor Superman. Like you were trying to show the S
I'm
on
not,
your chest.
I'm not great at
your arms
I'm not great at the arts. Whether
you
it's
gave him jazz
singing
hands at the end.
Or theater, the arts aren't my wheelhouse.
You're too tight.
You could say, yeah.
No, loosen up.
Yeah, no personality.
You think
way
BK would call it theater as opposed to theater?
I don't know if you said that incorrectly.
I'm just asking a question because we do know that he has his little idiosyncrasies in.
I don't know. I wouldn't put anything.
Stadium, progress, prospects.
Yeah,
theater. I mean, it's possible.
It's in the wheelhouse. So
Celine did her residency for like years
in Vegas.
I think
she still does.
No, she quit it.
Oh, did she?
Yeah, and I don't know if I think it was health related at first or something like that. And then, you know, she lost her husband and went through some things. Yeah. And I don't know. She was on tour. I think she came to Toyota Center. She was on tour across the country, and I think something kind of sidelined some of that as well.
She's got some pipes.
Did you realize Elton John was here this weekend, by the way, for two shows? And right after he left, he got COVID and had to cancel in Dallas. And now they're wondering when he's going to get back on tour. And this is the Goodbye Yellow Brick Road farewell tour.
We'll have to come back to Dallas, I guess. I mean, if you miss out on Dallas, I mean, you can be doing worse things.
Yeah, who's going to lose any sleep over that except for Total Dallas?
You talking about Celine Dion and her residency, Adele postponing her residency. That's your girl. Your girl's letting down millions of Americans, and I hate seeing
so many questions, right? Because she did that concert that I told you about that they showed on CBS with the interview with it. She was excited to do it. And they were talking about all the different details of it. And she did that concert in front of a lot of celebrities, but a pretty decent crowd. It wasn't massive, right? But there was a lot of people there. Then they started saying, well, it was COVID related. She canceled the first weekend. The residency was supposed to be this last weekend. And obviously prices were through the roof. There was a lottery to get
the
tickets.
She sold tickets.
Yeah. So then I see right after the Channel 2 news at 6, Entertainment Tonight comes on, and last night some Vegas insider guy starts reporting that she said it was COVID, but it wasn't. She might have real issues performing in front of crowds. And several trucks were seen actually taking out a majority of the set and the sound system. Because evidently one of the other things she had said was she and her people didn't think the sound system was at a certain level they wanted it to be. But this guy was actually saying they're like acting like it's over.
I was watching the Today Show, I think it was yesterday, and they had like an Entertainment Tonight dude on ETV dude on, and he was saying that there was like a clash with her and management and production, and like she wanted all of these things. She wanted a pull on stage and like all these demands, and production's like, I don't know if that's feasible, bro.
Yeah.
So who knows?
Depending on who you believe, and now, of course, because she's still with Rich Paul, he's at like the Laker game, and they're asking him, and he's like, I don't know anything about that. Or he was picking up food. He was picking up food, and they wanted answers on Adele.
Of course he
Adele.
Knows things about that.
And they had interviews with her previously where she said she has real issues performing in front of people. It's like, it's kind of what you do, aside from like...
I don't buy that. I don't buy that she has that issue.
I don't think so either.
Because I've seen her perform like at the Emmys and stuff like that.
And
I guess
saying,
Emmys
even
would not
concert
be the right
that
word.
That was on CBS, right? You can't screw that up.
No.
That's going to be on national TV. And so, I mean, it's a shame because, like, you guys know that I think how talented I think her voice is, but it's also like a cash cow. If you get one of those residencies.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, even people like Tony Braxton and otherwise, when we've been in Vegas before, just kill it like $1 million a performance. I think she was getting like $500,000 to $1 million per performance, and they were only on weekends, and they were set for like the next couple years. That's a sweet deal. Elton John's done it. Celine Dion's done it.
You don't have to go anywhere.
No.
Just stay there in Vegas. Don't have to travel. Yeah, it is a pretty sweet deal. Now to news that matters.
Yes.
Did you see that Little Debbie's is bringing out their cake snacks as ice creams? You can find these at Walmart, I think, coming up here pretty soon in February.
I want to ask you guys both. Were you Little Debbie guys?
Yeah.
Really?
Over what?
Well, so like growing up, and again, Brendan, this is where our Midwest background might come into play. We obviously weren't very well off, but we had a Hostess secondhand shop.
Oh, okay, like
so you would go for the Hostess
like
cupcakes
or the
Hostess Twinkies,
or
things like that. But we weren't in the Midwest. We weren't Little Debbie's people.
I lean Little Debbie over Hostess for sure because I like the oatmeal cream pie. I like the honey buns.
And what was the one
that
they had all the Peanuts characters, but they had their version of like the apple pie and the cherry pie and all those as well. Dolly Madison, maybe?
Oh, the ones that are like glazed over?
Yeah.
I don't remember what those are called, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, so those were also part of that. So we would get a lot of that stuff, but we were never like a Little Debbie's family. So that's why I was curious if you guys were.
I didn't discriminate in the unhealthy snack department.
But had Little Debbie's in Michigan?
Oh, yeah. I had both.
Okay.
Yeah, Little Debbie's the way to go, in my opinion. But
in my lunches growing up, my mom, it was either a Hostess cupcake or a Ding Dong.
I did like those chocolate swirls.
That's the Ding Dong.
When I was a kid. I don't know if that was the Ding Dong. I think it's called a chocolate swirl.
They have it's a like a hard chocolate on the outside log, and inside it's cake. And
it's like spirally?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think
that's
Ding Dong.
Look it up.
I'll look it up in a minute. But any of these ice creams from Little Debbie's that do it for you? Like, I'm a huge oatmeal cream pie guy. I like oatmeal cream pies. Me and Nick Saban are like two peas in a pod when it comes to that.
Okay.
I'm really intrigued to try the oatmeal cream pie ice cream.
Okay.
I like the honey bun that they make, but I have no interest in trying the ice cream. And I don't like their strawberry shortcake, but I think that sounds good in an ice cream
strawberry
variety.
Strawberry shortcake ice cream, I think, sounds good. And I used to, you guys know that I like cheesecake, too. So anytime I see where you go to an ice cream shop and they have strawberry or cherry cheesecake ice cream,
yeah,
I'm always a fan. It's always very good. But, like, it just depends. Like, I use my wife's terminology, but that's a waste of calories. If you're going to go sweet, she's obviously chocolate-aholic. So she's like, if you're going to go sweets and burn and use those calories, go chocolate, not oatmeal. But I understand, like, I like a good oatmeal cookie. So I would be open to trying, like, an oatmeal, especially the cinnamon. Oatmeal cinnamon with an ice cream in it. I think that'd be good.
I think it'd be very good. Brendan's known for his terrible takes on his show.
Here comes carrot cake a la mode.
Yeah, what terrible ice cream of Little Debbie's would you be most interested in trying?
Probably the oatmeal cream pie. I will tell you, I saw the strawberry shortcake, and I was like, it sounds good, but it's not a dessert.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's right.
I forgot about that. No fruits in Brendan's theory and philosophy can be considered dessert.
Why did you even ask?
Strawberry shortcake ice cream cannot be considered a dessert, according to Brendan. McDonald's is coming out with these menu hacks. Like people, we did this the other day at McBadword. What did I have the other day? I had a chicken sandwich and a double cheeseburger smashed together. So apparently,
was it the McBitch?
No, another bad word.
Okay.
But there's a,
say it.
They're coming up with these four menu hacks that apparently people order. I haven't heard of any of these. One of them is their hash brown McMuffin, which is a sausage McMuffin with egg plus a hash brown equals the hash brown McMuffin. That actually sounds really good to me.
It does sound really good, yeah.
I'd be very intrigued to have a hash brown McMuffin. That sounds very good. One of the other of the four is the Crunchy Double, which is actually my order whenever I go to McDonald's for lunch. It's the six-piece nuggets plus the double cheeseburger. I get that, but I never put them together.
No.
I never put them together. The Crunchy Double, you insert the six chicken McNuggets into the double cheeseburger.
Nope,
you're out
on
that?
Yeah, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't do that because you can eat them separately and get the same enjoyment.
And that's actually my order. I rather eat them separately, too.
No fries?
Well, I get the bundle. I get the double cheeseburger bundle, uh-huh. which gives you a small fry in addition to the double cheeseburger.
Fry, small.
Here we go. And then you get a six-piece nugget bundle, so you get two small fries out of the deal, and it's like $3.42. Right. Like, it doesn't get any better than that. The next two, I don't think we're going to be huge fans of. One of them's the Surf and Turf, which you put a fillet of fish inside of a double cheeseburger.
No.
That sounds so bad to me. And I had shrimp and fish soup for lunch today, and I would not try the Surfer Turf. And then the last one's Land, Air, and Sea, which is, it's huge. It's like a three-patty, three-bun type of deal. You have it's a combination of the Big Mac, the McChicken, and the fillet of fish.
No. And they're too much bun, too.
There's a lot of bun
you
there.
Get too much. You get too filled up with all the bun, too. Now, where are you guys on the breakfast burger, which would be the egg, hash brown, and burger?
You're talking about from Whataburger.
Now. Yeah.
I'm a huge fan.
Yeah, I could see that happening.
Now, their breakfast on a bun is so good, though, that it's hard for me to go away from that whenever I try Whataburger breakfast because their breakfast on the bun.
See, here's the other thing, like that chicken strip sandwich. I just would eat the chicken strips. I don't need it to make it into a sandwich, add a bun for just to actually fill me up quicker and throw barbecue sauce and cheese on it. I would just get the chicken fingers if that's what I wanted.
See, I'm a huge, like, let's keep the bread off.
Yeah.
Because I like the meat. I like the chicken. Like, I like everything else but the bread. Like, you need to have a small percentage of bread. But, like, in terms of, like, the bread to meat ratio, I feel like I'm like you, where I'm very low on that ratio. I don't need much bread. Just fill it up with meat and all the goodness.
Just to keep it off your hands, too. The bread actually serves that purpose. Unless the Texas toast sandwiches, when Texas toast is made the right way, that's a game changer. Because it's not a bun and a lot of wasted, just like yeasty white bun. You get that Texas toast done the right way and grilled the right way, that can make a sandwich better.
Like a patty melt from Whataburger? Those are very good. My wife was telling me when she was in Japan that they would have a shrimp patty burger at McDonald's in Japan. That's I love shrimp. That sounds horrendous. That sounds terrible.
Yeah, no, for that reason and a couple of more in terms of I'm not trusting fast food shrimp for freshness, quality, and the chance to get back at you in a few hours. Nope, I'm out.
Yeah, that was a hard no for me. Which of these four McHacks would you be most interested in trying?
The employees are supposed to know, they're not on the menu, but if you order these things, they're ready for you?
I guess. I don't know. I guess they're going to be like, I'm sure they're going to put them up there now. They're advertising it. Okay. We're talking about it on the radio, so
it's
I bet kinda, you that's
so it's
be
a little
well
different
known.
Than the McRib, which just mysteriously makes appearances every now and again.
The meat's seasonal, Joel. That's why it's only around certain times of the year. It's seasonal. Yeah, but for me, I'm going the hash brown McMuffin.
And if I'm doing fast food, I'm not getting a rib sandwich. I'm going burgers and fries or chicken McNuggets or a chicken sandwich. I'm not going ribs, fake rib sandwich, if I'm going fast food.
I try the McRib every 2 to 3 years to remind myself that it's disgusting and I don't like it. But I do dabble with it every 2 to 3 years. I'll be honest. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. If James Harden wants back in Houston, I'm here to welcome him.
Oh, my God. Where were you yesterday?
Under certain conditions. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.